Hello, and welcome to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. Mike is an author, teacher, and conference speaker, and is president of Christian Training and Development Services. Creation Matters is dedicated to the teaching of the biblical and scientific truths about God's creation. In the beginning, God created, and for by Him were all things created. And now here's your host of Creation Matters, Mike Riddle.
Welcome to Creation Matters. This is your host, Mike Riddle, and we have a great teaching show for you today. And I'd like to start off with a question. If you doubt or your children doubt what the Bible teaches about creation because you were taught a lie, would you be angry about that?
I would be.
Or how about if somebody called you a Neanderthal? Would you be angry about that?
I would be.
Well, that's the topic of our show today. Neanderthals, who were they? When did they live? We have with us today a leading authority on Neanderthals, Dr. Jacques Coiseau. Jack, are you there? Hello, Jack. Well, we seem to have lost Jack, Dr. Coiseau. We'll come back to him in just a moment. But how about that question? If you were called a Neanderthal, would you be really upset about that? Were they really archaic people that lived thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago? Or maybe were they really human beings? And maybe what we're being taught in the education system is not true. Dr. Coiseau,
could you tell us
a little bit about your background? What sparked your interest in becoming a creationist and a speaker?
Well, Mike, when I first came to Christ in 1975, I realized that there was a lot more to Christianity than just the New Testament. I looked at the Old Testament, and my evolutionary background rose up and challenged everything that I now believed in, where I had put my faith. One of the first things I saw was that Eve came from the body of Adam. Now, I had heard that, and I was brought up and somewhat in a church. However, I never took it seriously. And when I realized that in the evolutionary fossil record or in the evolutionary theory, there's no place for a woman to come from a man's body, this really challenged and hurt my understanding of the Old Testament and of my belief in Jesus Christ. I was really at a point where I needed to go out and look into the record of the fossils myself, and because I didn't know if the Old Testament was allegory or whether it had been something that we could not take seriously.
You know, I was just in Milwaukee these last couple of days, and I was teaching a class there, and I had a man in my class who thought everything that dealt with creation was just an allegory. You know what that means? Jesus died for an allegory. That
right.
Doesn't say a whole lot.
Right. No, it didn't. And that's what I was concerned about. And so I saw that there was an area that I could do something in. And that was the earliest known people back in 1976 and 77, according to my anthropology professor in graduate school, were the Neanderthals. He and I got together, reacquainted our friendship, or renewed a friendship, and looked at them together. I studied under him for a while, and he actually suggested that I go to France with a sophisticated X-ray machine and look into it myself. And I couldn't imagine how I was going to be able to get in to see these, especially since only trained scientists, and I was an orthodontist, of course, so I guess I fell into somewhat of that category. Only trained anthropologists were allowed to see these things.
That's interesting. Now, for you teachers and you students out there, if you'd like to talk to one of the leading researchers in the field on Neanderthals and who they were and when they lived, give us a call, the local station, at 206-374-8800. That's 206-374-8800, or you can call toll-free 800-955-8200. Now, Jack, you mentioned you're an orthodontist, and you've done some original research on the actual Neanderthal fossils. Now, most people never get to see these bones, but you've actually done some original research.
Yeah, and I was blessed. That's all I can say. It had very little to do with me. My professor wrote a letter for me to the Museum of Man called the Musée de l'Homme in Paris, where they kept most of the Neanderthal fossils in France, and that was the place I needed to get into first. Then I was given a very special X-ray machine by a man who had invented it that we use all the time in our orthodontic offices, but the portable version of it was not readily available. There was only one in Sweden and one in the United States, and I was given the one in the United States to take with me. It was another great blessing. Then we were given, again, an apartment to live in outside of Paris for a month, which we readily accepted. And so I went there thinking that with this letter of introduction would help me from my professor, who, by the way, identified the remains of Hitler and Eva Braun, so he was pretty famous during World War II, but he was an old man by the time I went there in 1979, but he had written this letter for me. And I brought the letter in. I had received nothing back from the museum, the communication whatsoever, so I went basically over on faith with all this equipment and five children and my wife. 25 bags, and plus the, 500 or so pounds of, X-ray equipment. Went up to this man's desk in the Musée de l'Homme one day, just surprisingly announced myself, and he essentially turned me down. He said, no, I can't let you in here. I'm not, you can't look at these things. You're just an orthodontist. Why should I let you in? And I said, well, you remember Dr. Krogman, and I mentioned my professor, and he's the one who identified Hitler, and I talked about that. And something jogged in his mind when I said that, because he thought back to the time of his childhood when his parents were rescued by American GIs, and he told me that story. And he said, you know, I've never paid you Americans back for that favor. And he said, I'm going to let you in my museum because I want to pay you back for what your country did for my parents and rescue them from the Nazis. They were going off to concentration camp at the time. And so because of some brave GIs and because of the blessing of God, I was able to get into this museum and take the first orthodontic X-rays. Previous X-rays were very impractically done, very, very poorly done, and very unmeasurable. You could not tell what the measurements were, but the first measurable X-rays in history of the Neanderthal people in France.
Well, this is going to be very interesting, Jack, because one of the things I have found out in some of my research and study is the pictures we find in textbooks don't match the real fossils.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you tell us, what did you find? What kind of, you went in with all this equipment, and
yep.
You actually got to do the X-rays, and I've been to your house, and I've seen some of those pictures, and they are amazing pictures.
Yeah, well, the first thing we did was we picked up a little child that was supposedly 2 years of age, a Neanderthal child, which was famous. It was the type specimen in France. This is the one that they all use when they point to the young infant Neanderthal. Well, I picked him up, and I had a book in front of me that Dr. Krogman had given me called The Neanderthal Centenaries, 100-year anniversary study of Neanderthals. And in that book was an article about this little 2-year-old child. And I took the upper jaw and the head and put the lower jaw in. And as an orthodontist, I knew how the teeth fitted together. And they fitted together perfectly. And the jaw went right in the sockets. And there was no, what we call in orthodontics, malocclusion, meaning the teeth hit properly. They didn't have any improper occlusion. In the book, it was quite a different story. The picture, and this is the original research done by a fellow by the name of Pat, E. Pat, P-A-T-T-E, and he had this jaw out of position forward in an ape-like configuration and said that it didn't fit inside the head. Would not fit because it was protruded and something was wrong with it. Well, there was nothing wrong with it. And when I put it back in position and took my X-rays in that position, I knew right then I was going to be in trouble.
Are you saying then that what you're actually saying there is what I just said, is some of these pictures we're seeing in the textbooks aren't what we really found? They've been rearranged to promote something called evolution?
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true. While I was there, besides this then and another skull which had a lower jaw positioned too far forward, there was an anthropologist over in the corner, and he was cutting a chin off of a Neanderthal skull called Laquina number 5, and that appeared on the cover. The first, I think, 5 editions of my book had that on the cover, front cover. It's now on the back cover. He actually cut the chin off and brought it over to me, and he had it covered with a dental compound, a hot dental compound, which I was very familiar with. I had worked in my dad's office. My dad was a dentist, and worked in his office and used this kind of hot compound way back when I was a kid, and I used it in dental school. And what he had done is cut all the teeth off and didn't even determine where the sockets were. I mean, didn't even make an attempt. Just put the teeth back in an ape-like configuration, which is U-shaped, compared to the human, which is a parabolic shape. It's a pretty big difference. It's a straight U. And he had this in a U shape, and the chin was gone, which had the chin previously. And in its place was just some of this dental hot compound. The thing was pretty warm. He brought it over to me, and he said, "How do you like this? And you're an orthodontist. What do you think about this teeth?" And I said, "Well, it's not so bad. Can I take a picture of it?" And so I did get a picture of it. Of course, I had in that book right in front of me that I don't know if he realized or not, but there was a picture of that exact jaw with the chin on it. Now, why did he take the chin off? Well, because apes don't have chins, and he wanted to make it look more ape-like. So when I saw that, I realized that, oh, boy, anything goes here. I better watch out. I'm going to have some big problems.
Well, this is incredible information, and, I've been to your house. I've seen these x-rays that you've actually done, and I've seen compared some of the other textbook pictures we have of were supposed to be our human ancestors dating back millions of years ago, and they don't match anywhere near what the actual fossils show. Mm-hmm. But this is a great opportunity for you students and your teachers out there to understand what the real science has to offer, and we need to get sometimes outside our comfort zone, get outside those textbooks, and go find out what really is happening. Who were these Neanderthals? Who were they really? And you can go there. You can go to our website, creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. And you can click on the Creation Matters icon right there on the home page, and you can go to a page that talks about, gives you all the links that gives you additional information on Neanderthals. And also, you can go to Jack Quazzo's own personal website, and on there you can find some of these pictures he's posted, and even find the book he's written called Buried Alive. Wonderful book all about Neanderthals. So if you want to find out some information, if you have to write reports in your schools, you students need to go to creationmatters.org. Click on the Creation Matters box, and you can get a lot of information to help you write some of these reports. We have many links out there just about Neanderthals. So we need to go on a break here in just a moment, but I would like to challenge you as we go on this break to go to that website and find out the real information. And if you're a teacher, are you teaching incorrect information, and what can we really do about it? We need to get education back to the schools and start teaching accurate science.
And if you would like to be a part of the program, give Jack or Mike a call, toll free,
895-8200. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Creation Matters, and I'm your host, Mike Riddle, on Seattle Christian Talk, KGNW 820. And sitting with me here is Pete Talbot, and on the phone lines is one of the leading experts with Neanderthals, Jack Quazzo. Welcome here, Pete.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I'm just fascinated by all of this, and I just sort of want to let our listeners know that they can call in, and what an opportunity to talk to both you and to Dr. Quazzo about this whole area of Neanderthals. And folks, if you've got questions anywhere in this ballpark, now's the time, folks. I would imagine we've got teachers out there that are saying, "Oh my goodness, what is going on here? What do I do tomorrow in science class?" And you've got students listening right now, Mike, that are saying, "Oh my goodness, how do I respond to what I'm being taught?" So if you've got questions, you've got comments, give us a call here in the studio. Never a better time to do that. 1-800-955-8200. That's 1-800-955-8200. And may I just, I've got a couple of questions. I'll only ask one now, but could we start at the very basics? What is the definition? How do you define a Neanderthal?
Well, Neanderthal is basically a person that resembles the original Neanderthal discovery, which came in 1856 in the Neander Valley in Germany, which is somewhere near Dusseldorf, Germany, and 1859, and has a configuration. The adults have a large set of brow ridges. They have a protruded cheekbone on both sides. They have a quite long nose and a nose that is up slightly elevated. They have teeth that are very far forward in their jaws. They have a lot of room for their third molars, opposite of what we have, which most of our people today, most of my patients have very little room for their third molars or wisdom teeth. They have a skull that's a much larger brain size than we do. We average, say, somewhere between 1,400 and 1,500, then the Neanderthals go 1,500 to 1,600 cc's. So there's an evolutionary enigma in itself. The children are quite different, though. The children have faces which are very small, and we call them retruded in orthodontics, which means not well-developed, and have all the characteristics of very slow maturation, with baby teeth that were lost in their late 20s and perhaps early 30s.
And some other things we found about those Neanderthals is they use jewelry. You know, ape-like creatures don't have that manipulative power to make jewelry. We've also found musical instruments with them. They've done cave paintings. We've even found the anatomy to show that they were very capable of human speech. Mm-hmm. And here's another thing. They buried their dead. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, we're the only species that actually buries their dead. Other animals might dig up bones and bury bones, but they don't bury their dead. We're the only species that does that.
Mm-hmm. And they're correct in Mike saying that they actually bury their dead, but they bury them also with artifacts. One of the things that happened early on, one of the first Neanderthals discovered in France was La Chapelle-aux-Saints, named after the town. In that particular grave, which was only a couple of feet deep, actually, but it was packed, the cave was packed with dirt, a very small cave, there was a ring of jasper stones, like a necklace, around the neck of the La Chapelle-aux-Saints, and they were thrown out hastily, almost immediately after this discovery. And that was in the original grave report there. The reason they were thrown out was because that was supposed to be 50,000 years of age, or 50,000 years ago, when that Neanderthal existed. Yet these jasper stone necklaces don't come into the fossil record till around 27,000 years, or perhaps 25,000. So there was a time discrepancy in there, and they said, we can't have that. And this is a practice that is abhorrent in science, and yet it's not uncommon.
Now, Jack, I've read many of these biology textbooks and other textbooks, and this is where I really want to point. What's happening in our education system? I read these textbooks, and they talk about Neanderthals being back in, let me put it this, back in 1964, they said Neanderthals were a subspecies of humans. Mm-hmm. Then in 1997, based on some mitochondrial DNA, they decide Neanderthals are a separate species. Now, mm-hmm. Who were these Neanderthals, and when did they really live?
Well, they were our ancestors. There's no question about it, because I have patients today with Neanderthal traits. You still see some small traits of Neanderthals. So we've come from them. They were the long-lived people that we read about in the Book of Genesis. Now, the ones I've seen, based upon their burial contents in the graves, the fact that they were undisturbed graves, were mostly post-flood people, I believe, in Western Europe, people that had migrated out from the Tower of Babel into Western Europe, caught pretty much high and dry beginning of an ice age and living in pretty harsh conditions. However, living a long, long time and giving lots of evidence of that life within the bones of their skull. And this was able to be seen with not only my studies, but independent studies done by a group in California that I had measure my x-rays. So we see that in the Neanderthal himself or herself, there are these characteristics of humanity, no question about that. However, a very long-lived, long life that they experienced. They had a tooth that could, especially the primary teeth, the baby teeth, the molars were called torodont molars, meaning bull-like. They could go 30, 40 years. There's no torodont or baby molars in existence today. The adults had these teeth as well. And their enamelware showed their long life. So we have lots of criteria. I have lots of data. My book is full of data. We have over 80 illustrations describing how these people fulfill all the criteria for old people from the Bible, and I believe somewhere between 250 to 300 years of age, and post-flood people. So that puts them in the vicinity of Genesis 11. Now, obviously, we came from the people of Genesis 11. How do you get to look like a Neanderthal? Is you just have to live past 200 years, and that takes a special superior type of genome. Well, what they found in the mitochondrial DNA may have showed some of the more powerful battery packs or of the cell, so to speak, which are what mitochondria are, that they contained. So this may be it, rather than this there's no species difference. But you see, because they showed longevity, and this is one of my main points, because they showed longevity in the adults and immaturity in the children, I mean, the Neanderthal 2-year-old was about the equivalent of a human embryo, roughly in the vicinity of 12 to 14 weeks of age. So that's really, really immature. The facial construction, the facial angulation that I study every day in my patients, that looked very much like an embryonic, except it had teeth,
so
embryonic type of jaw structure.
So what you're saying here is somebody called you a Neanderthal, that's not derogatory, that's really a compliment.
It's a compliment. The only reason it stuck as a derogatory phrase is because of the cartoons that came out after Neanderthal was discovered in Germany. And that Neander Valley, of course, was named after the hymn writer Joachim Neander, whom we have many hymns in church created by that man.
Well, we have a caller right now, and well, let's go to our first caller. Art, you're on. You have a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your time. I appreciate both of your study and the work you put into it, and I find your subject fascinating. I'm a little bit, or quite a ways off subject here, but around here we have glacial deposits, quote-unquote, where all the rocks are round or plaster deposits, and also we have very little topsoil in many, many areas. It's actually all over the world. It's the average is 4 to 14 inches, I believe. And doesn't that all point back to about 6,000 years ago there was a great flood? I know glaciers don't make round rocks, and yet scientists claim that we live on glacial till here in the area. Is that true or what?
Well, you're exactly right on there. There was an ice age, and we do know that the glaciers came down to the North America area. And glaciers don't make so much around rocks. A lot of water running over rocks gets them nice and smooth and rounded. But, yes, the stratification and what we see in the geologic record does support a very young Earth, because there's overwhelming evidences that things can happen very, very fast. And I want to stick with just that, Art, because we do want to get back to these Neanderthals.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Now, Jack, Dr. Croizot, one of the things you mentioned, they were found in 1859, and the first pictures that came out, and I've seen these in textbooks also, these first pictures of Neanderthals had them as a very brutish-looking character, bent over and hair all over the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things I like to point out is when we find these bones, we don't find hair, we don't find eyeballs, we don't find noses.
Mm-hmm.
How did they know what to make them look like?
Well, again, Mike, they wanted to make them look ape-like because they didn't have many fossils, and they wanted to make a connection between the apes and us. And that was the prevailing thought of the day among some of the scientists. The early scientists believed that this was a link. And if it was a link, then it had to have the same kind of posture, and it had to have the same kind of positioning of the skull over the spinal column. They created this original image of Neanderthal, and Marcelin Boule was the first one who did that. Later on, of course, it was found by Cave and Strauss that this was a misconstruction. However, there were arthritic joints in that spine, and the man had arthritis. Certainly, if you're going to live 300 years, you're going to have arthritis. And I found arthritis in the jaw joint as well of that particular fossil that Marcelin Boule put together, where that image came from.
Interesting. Now, Pete, you've been just sitting here chewing around here. You've got another question you'd love to ask.
I just am itching to ask this question.
Go ahead.
It seems to me that if you've got scientists cutting off chins and creating out of their own imagination and out of their own desire to prove evolution, who can we trust and who can't we trust among the scientific community? I mean, it sounds like there's an awful lot of blatant cheating. I mean, it's just flat out non-science.
You're right.
How do they justify that? How does a scientist justify that?
I've overheard conversations, and the conversations have gone like this. Well, we're going to help rid the world of these religious superstitions. That's what I've overheard. And I've been in the museums with a white coat on all over the world. And, of course, nobody knew who I was. And my boys were with me to hear these things. And that's the predominant feeling, is that we have a superstition, pretty much what you heard in the last, in the election, and what you're hearing from the opposition, the losing side, is that
bunch of dumb Christians that don't know any better and they'll believe anything.
And we need to educate them. And so even if it takes changing these things to prove that we're right, that's what we're going to do. And let me tell you one other thing.
Well, Jack, can we hold on to that for just a moment?
Go ahead.
To go on a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue with Dr. Jack Quazzo, one of the leading experts on Neanderthals. And if you would like to talk to him, call in on 206-374-8800. That's 206-374-8800.
And folks, I know you've got questions out there. I've got questions. This is fascinating stuff. So give us a call, 800-955-8200. Call us right away. This is good stuff.
You're listening to Creation Matters. This is Mike Riddle on Christian Talk Radio, KGNW 820 with Hope Now Live. And I've got Pete Talbot in the studio with me. And on the other line, we have Dr. Jack Quazzo, a leading expert in Neanderthals. And I'd like to start this piece right now. If you're a student out there and you're being taught all evolution, as most schools do, and don't give you much of a choice, but if you're being taught evolution, you need to go to our website, creationmatters.org, and click on the Creation Matters box at the top of our homepage there, and you can find a lot of extra resources that point right to links on the internet to download all about Neanderthals. And you can also go to Dr. Jack Quazzo's own personal webpage where you can find some of these pictures and order the book that he's written called Buried Alive, a wonderful book. Now, I'd like to add something here. I always like to do numbers. My background is a lot of mathematics and computers. And I always like to see, do the numbers really add up? Now, I've just recently written a preliminary paper called Neanderthals and Population Statistics. Now, according to most of these textbooks out there, Neanderthals were living for over 100,000 years on this planet. They supposedly died out somewhere around 30 to 35,000 years ago, but they're living for over 100,000 years. Now, here's the problem. If that was true, we should actually be stepping on Neanderthal bones and artifacts everywhere we go in Europe. For example, from the year 1 to the year 2000, we've increased the population on this planet by almost 6 billion people. That's in just 2,000 years. But if the Neanderthals were living for over 100,000 years, that means there would have been billions and billions, probably over 100 billion Neanderthals that lived during that time. And that's very conservative statistics there, folks. Folks, if there were 100 billion Neanderthals living and they buried their dead and buried their dead with artifacts, where are all the bones? The numbers don't add up for evolution. They add up that they were a recent type of people, 100% human, probably better than what we are today based on all the research. Where are those bones, folks? The numbers really support the biblical model that people did live a long time, and the Neanderthals, as we've said, lived sometime after the flood and were living for 150, 200, maybe 250 years or more, and that's why they have the anatomy that they have. They were not brutish ape-like people. If you're being taught that in schools, you need to go to our website, creationmatters.org, and get that information, or get to the Jack Quazzo's, Dr. Quazzo's website and get some of those pictures and take those pictures into your teachers, folks. We need to get science back to the science classroom. We need to take and get the religion of evolution out of the science classroom.
Dr. Quazzo, before the break, you were about to make another point. We were talking about scientists and how they tend to make up whatever they want to make up, and you were just about to make a point when we had to go to a break. Do you remember where you were?
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Good.
It's about red ochre burials. Red ochre is a red powder that was used on the Neanderthals skeletons, actually bodies, as well as early what we call archaic Homo sapiens bodies, after they died, to give them the appearance of life. It's a reddish powder that's an iron oxide, and it's been used in the, of course, in the uniformitarian scale of things from 5000 BC all the way up into Neanderthal times. Now, there was a claim when I started out looking at Neanderthals back in 1979 that there was no red ochre in the Neanderthals, and absolutely on the outside of the skulls there was none. It had all been scraped off or washed off or something done to it. But if you turn the skull around and look inside, where, of course, the photographers for National Geographic or other scientific magazines do not take pictures, you'll see red ochre in the skulls. And so that would make a burial custom last from, say, in their scale of time, and I don't believe in this scale of time, but just using their reference points, from around 3000 B.C. In Iraq area and the Ubaidian Cemetery in Mesopotamia, all the way to, say, 50 to 60,000 years ago in the Peshd el-Azay and La Ferassi skeletons, that were discovered in France. So that's a burial custom that lasted, say, 60,000, 50, 60,000 years. That doesn't make any sense. I never heard of a burial custom lasting that long, and I don't think they believed it could last that long either. And I think that's why they washed it off the outside of the skulls. Let me just make one other point. I was incorrect when I said 1859. Back to 1856, the first Neanderthal skull was discovered in the Neander Valley. Sorry about that.
Now, Dr. Quazzo, you're not relying on just pictures you've seen in textbooks or plastic models
So
you have actually seen and x-rayed the real original bones.
Yeah, if you look at my book, I have pictures of the red ochre inside a root of a tooth in La Ferassi, and it's on the inside of the root of the tooth, so you can't see it from the outside, and inside the Peshd el-Azay skull, which is that little two-year-old Neanderthal child that I picked up, we saw that right away. We saw that red ochre right away, my son and I, and we took pictures of it. And we didn't say a word to anyone about that for a long, long time.
Now, Dr. Quazzo, could you give everybody your website so they could go straight there and get some of this information?
Yeah, it's jackquazzo.com. Jackquazzo.com. C-U-O-Z-Z-O.
That's jackquazzo.com.
Quazzo.com.
C-U-O-Z-Z-O. You need to go there, and you can see some of those pictures, and you'll see his book. Or you can go to our website, creationmatters.org, click on the Creation Matters box, and you can get there that way. Now, lots of information out there.
There's a couple other skulls that I saw that were tampered with. One of them was Lemoustier, which came from France. It's called Lemoustier No. 1. It's supposed to be a teenage Neanderthal. Again, the type specimen. But I saw this, and I x-rayed it and worked with it in Berlin, in East Berlin, actually.
Now, Dr. White, we don't have to know how to pronounce these names, do we?
No, you don't.
Okay.
Anyway, this skull had the upper jaw moved 30 millimeters forward in the skull, and the lower jaw moved 30 millimeters forward, and in between, a lot of plastic material, similar to that stuff I talked about, the hot dental compound, a lot of plastic compound squeezed in this skull to give it an ape-like appearance. So we're talking about quite a distance of movement of these jaws. So when I saw this, I was able to take the skull, and it came in pieces, actually, as we found in the pieces, put them back normally together and take x-rays of them and reconstruct the skull, look very much like a modern teenager. However, what we did discover was this teenager was in his late 20s, perhaps early 30s.
Now, if you think this is just an isolated case, folks, now, I want to make clear that it's not that these people are deliberately dishonest all the time. Sometimes these people, that's all they can believe is evolution. They cannot get outside the box of evolution. So everything they find must be somehow interpreted in evolutionary means. Well, that's not good science. It may not mean they're not being dishonest, but it's not good science. If you think this is an isolated case, folks, next week we're not going to talk about ape men. We're going to talk about ape women. You women out there were very hairy at one time, according to all these evolutionists, too, and had to shave. We're going to talk about Lucy and the Australopithecines, and we have some powerful evidence to show how some of these pictures in the textbooks have been altered, and we actually have that on video. We've caught it on video, how they actually took a saw and took some of the bones apart and put them back together again to make them look like ape-like creatures, or make them look like they were human beings walking upright with hair all over them. We have some powerful evidence today to support this. And what they're teaching in the textbooks, folks, is not good science. Now, Dr. Quazzo, you've made quite a bit of study of all this, and you spent almost a lifetime doing the study of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read your book, and there's some incredible pictures in there.
Mm-hmm.
You've just written a recent paper. Could you tell us what you've written in that paper and why you wrote the paper?
Well, Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, asked me to write a paper on this latest revelation coming out of Germany of a scientist there who had changed the dates on three of the skulls that he had examined. His name was von Zeiten. He also got in trouble because he tried to sell some chimpanzee skulls that belonged to the university. However, the dates of the skulls were starting with one Neanderthal forehead, went from 36,000 years to around 7,500 years using the radiocarbon accelerator unit from Oxford University. They decided to check his dates on these skulls, these three of them, because of the sale, I believe, of the chimpanzee skull. So they thought, we'll go back and see what else he's been doing. The Paderborn skull, which is widely quoted as having an absolute date, I love the way they use that word, absolute, of 27,000 years old, was cut open and had a stench emanating from its innards. It smelled. It's been quoted widely as a 27,000-year-old, and it turns out that it actually belonged to an elderly man who died in 1750.
Oh, my goodness.
To add to the confusion, there's a Bischoff Speyer modern female skeleton found near southwest German town of Speyer. It's no longer thought to be 21,000 years old, but closer to 3,000 years old. And they wanted me to write about this because, of course, I had done what Paul had prescribed and exposed the deeds of darkness in the other cases. Not that that was my primary objective. My primary objective was to see how science supported the scriptures, and I did find that it really supported the scriptures if it's allowed, if the skulls, the bones, and the fossils are allowed to tell the truth.
Well, let's come back to that. I want to continue with that because that's just amazing evidence that shows what we're teaching is not based on real science. And if you need to talk to Dr. Jack Pozzo or myself, call in at 206-374-8800. That's 206-374-8800 or 800-955-8200. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Creation Matters, and I'm Mike Riddle from Seattle Christian Talk, KGNW 820. We're on Hope Now Live, and I've got Pete Talbin in the studio with me, and leading expert in Neanderthals, Dr. Jack Quazzo on the phone lines. And folks, if you've ever been in doubt about what the Bible teaches, you know I find an awful lot of Christians that doubt God's Word because they were taught wrong information in the education system. We should stand up and stand on the authority of God's Word. We don't have anything to be ashamed of, folks. The Bible is true from beginning to very end, and God's Word will never change. But you know, evolution, they change their story sometimes every 2 years, every year, sometimes every month they're changing their story. Why would you ever want to stand on that? Why do we let that cause doubts in our belief in God's Word?
In fact, this is just coming to me. I just feel compelled to tell all of our listeners right now, Mike and Dr. Quazzo, for those of you listening who want more information, who maybe would like Mike to come, this program is being heard throughout the greater Seattle area and the Northwest. Maybe you need Mike to come to your church. Maybe you need Mike to teach at your homeschooling conference or what have you. This is what he does. He basically spends the majority of his life around the country teaching. But he's right here. He lives right here in Redmond, folks. And he's available. I mean, this is what his heart's desire is. So the facts are available. The teaching are available. Go to creationmatters.org and find out all the tools that are available. Things that you can do in your home and church and home Bible studies. It's really quite exciting. So get to creationmatters.org and see how you can bless your family, your church, your Bible study, your home group. Okay? Creationmatters.org.
Thank you, Pete. And one more thing. We are a listener-supported ministry. We, in order to keep this type of a show on, we need to get your support. And you can go out to Creation Matters and find out how to do that. Support how to get good science into the education system and how to save this next generation from being taught something that's not true. Now, Dr. Quazzo, I have a couple more questions for you.
And only, unfortunately, about 3 minutes to go.
I'd like to get to this question. What would you be your advice to someone seeking the truth about the history of man?
I would say to look at the Bible as truth. Jesus said in John 17, he said, "Thy word is truth." And I'm just going to give you a quick example. In the fall of man, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, to the woman God said, "I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you'll bring forth children." Now, one of the things you find in very ancient people is wide hips. And as we went down through the years, as time went on, we have found narrower and narrower hips. And that's completely opposite of what evolution would say, because evolution would say, of course, your hips had to get larger because the heads were getting larger. But that's not true. You can make a prediction based on the Word of God, and you will find wide hips in the Neanderthals and archaic Homo sapiens, much wider than our hips today. And apparently, this pain came from some type of narrowing of the hips. And even the evolutionists admit it when they look at pelvises like the one from Spain called Elvis the Pelvis, which is a male, and the female had to be much larger. They even say that this kind of a pelvis could give birth to a child very easily. So this is where I am coming from right now, is looking at the scriptures as truth, making predictions from the scriptures, and then looking back into the scientific evidence and seeing how they confirm the scriptures. And it can happen every time.
Jack, I really just appreciated the work you've done, and you're one of the few people in the world that's actually seen the real bones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to finish with one final piece of science here. In 1997, they found some mitochondrial DNA of one of the Neanderthals, and they assumed that it was outside the human range. But, you know, here's what they found. They took that one Neanderthal bone. They've actually found two Neanderthals now where they've supposedly found mm-hmm. this mitochondrial DNA.
Right.
And compared it to over 1,000 human species, 1,000 humans.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that's a statistical inaccuracy. You can't compare two against 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But what they found was this. They compared to modern humans. They saw that there were 22 substitution differences between humans. But within Neanderthals, they found out within modern humans, the range is 1 to 24 differences in the DNA. So between Neanderthals and humans, there's 22 differences in the DNA. But between humans, there's 24 possible differences. That means the Neanderthals go within the human range. But according to evolution logic, using their own logic, what that would mean is 2% of you out there, folks, are not humans. Because they're saying that Neanderthals were not humans, and they do fall within the human range based on the mitochondrial DNA. But using their logic, folks, 2% of you out there are not humans. So what are you? Where did you come from? That's evolution logic. And Jack, if you had one more thing to say, what would it be?
What would it be is that I would consider the claims of Christ to be absolutely true. If you want to question your faith, I would pray and I would look into the scriptures and look at it as truth, as I said before. And it can be verified. Look into the websites that Mike was speaking about, and look at my website, and you will see that we are not making something
good.
Equal to the Word of God. We're just supporting it.
Okay, next week, Lucy and the Officer of Byzantines, a dynamite show. Thank you, and God bless all of you.
You've been listening to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. If you'd like more information on today's topic or information about Christian training and development services, simply call 425-269-3196. That's 425-269-3196. Or go to the website creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. And click on the KGNW radio box. Join us next Tuesday at 6 when we'll discover and discuss the truth that for by Him all things were created. That's all right here next week on Creation Matters, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live.